Hey, Pardon My Take listeners. You can find every episode on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music. On today's Pardon My Take, we have seven-time NBA champion, Big Shot Bob. Robert Horry. Awesome interview with Robert Horry. The guy's been through like a million different awesome NBA stories and series and teammates and everything, coaches. We have Guys on Chicks. We have Billy back in person. Great to see you, Billy. Whether you're searching for a home to buy or you're just obsessed with looking at homes for sale, Redfin's got you covered. Redfin updates their listings every 2 minutes so you can find the home that's just right for you. You can favorite homes, share listings with others, and even schedule tours with a local Redfin agent all in the app. When you're ready to buy, an experienced local Redfin agent can guide you through the whole process. So download the Redfin app today to get started. Okay, let's go.
It's Pardon My Take, presented by Barstool Sports.
Welcome to Pardon My Take, presented by Chevy Silverado, the strongest, most advanced Silverado ever. Today is Wednesday, February 17th, and everyone is quitting on Coach K.
It's the beginning of the end of the season. Yeah. I give Coach K a
week. You were saying everyone's quitting on Hardbody.
It's been.
Mission Hardbody.
Oh, was that you who tweeted that picture?
Yeah.
First of all, Hank, we tried mixing in salads. We tried getting healthy, and nothing bad, nothing good
COVID.
Has happened since we ate salads. We started eating salads 2 weeks ago. In that time frame, Big Cat's passed a kidney stone.
Yep.
I've passed a kidney stone. I've got like seven more on deck. Big Cat got coronavirus.
You got bronchitis. Jake got potty mouth. Liam is probably going to get hit by a car again.
Billy's back. Nothing good's happened.
Yeah. So fuck eating healthy.
No,
what are you going to say, Liam?
I locked myself out of my apartment yesterday. That was probably worse than COVID.
And on your way to get a salad, right?
Yeah, I guarantee you all the cars in New Jersey were like, fresh meat, baby. Mm-hmm. Fresh meat on the roadway. Kid doesn't have an apartment. Going to mow him down.
You're still here.
And with potty mouth. Potty mouth.
For charity.
You have potty mouth.
For charity.
That's a fact. Billy, do you have anything to say for this? You are our doctor.
I got a sunburn.
Okay, great, Billy. Billy's problem is he vacationed too hard.
That's coward. You pulled the coward.
Yeah.
What?
You did too coward. Much sick he, stuff. You were outside too much. You were too close to the sun.
He was strained because he was dropping in off his helicopter. He was doing some copters. What do you call it? Chopper skiing? What is that? Heli-skiing. He was heli-skiing. All right, so. Moving on.
Back to
Duke.
LeBron. Oh.
Everyone's quitting on Duke. Hank?
Your comment.
I'm just curious, how do you get more than one kidney stone at one time?
Oh, come on, Hank. Let's not deflect on this
situation.
No, they
actually do come in threes.
Really?
Yeah. I got one, he got two.
I have an indeterminate amount of kidney stones. I actually have an appointment. I'm running out of names for them. I got Stony Romo, Stony Siragusa, Kidney Ponstone, Kid Rock. I got a lot lined up, but not enough to deal with all the shit that's going through my system right now. Although many people have told me, and Big Cat, you can attest to this, that passing a kidney stone through your kidney into your bladder is actually more painful than childbirth.
Yeah,
so
it's true.
I know to all you award-winning listening females out there that are giving birth, I feel your pain.
Mm-hmm.
It sucks, but you know what? I didn't miss a show.
I don't think the cowboy hat works.
Oh, no, I disagree.
I have to say it.
You liar. I've gotten nothing but rave reviews.
Oh, no way.
From
a bunch of 20-year-olds are like, dude, that's sick.
It looks sick.
I don't know if it
works. Jealousy's not a good color on your
No, it's not jealousy. I'm being... Again, we had this discussion on Monday. You can't let someone in the crew just change their entire look.
He is from Texas.
Yeah.
But, like,
listen,
that's...
I've been there. I can
standing
walk the walk, talk
standing
the talk.
Strong with that.
This is solidarity with all my friends that don't have energy.
You're not even wearing headphones anymore.
No, I'm raw-dogging it. That's a Texas way.
That is
problem. This is...
It ain't my way to wear the cans.
What are you doing?
That's New York City slicker stuff. I don't need electronics involved in this.
What are you doing?
This is you, me, and Hank sitting down having a chat. We don't need to bring headphones.
Jesus Christ. All right. Well, are you actually going to do this?
No, I'm probably going to give it up after a couple of days.
Okay. All right. Then I won't say anything else. If at some point in the next 2 weeks, you come in.
I'll quietly.
No goodbye. No see you later. It's just there's no cowboy hat anymore.
Yeah, I'll ride off into the sunset is what we say in the West.
Then that'll be the last I talk about.
Have you or have you not bought more cowboy hats? Because you still have your generic first one.
No, this is very much still me because this was a free cowboy hat. Mm-hmm. So this was given to us by the good people at PBR. So I'm going to wear this one. And I still have my old Texas clothes, which are a lot of pearl snap shirts. You know what? I got my first kidney issue after I started watching a show literally called Yellowstone.
Mm-hmm.
That's another issue.
Yep.
Maybe it's not the salad. But no, like most things, I'll just kind of forget about it.
Okay, that's fair. That's totally fair. Yeah, I mean, we're in a weird, it's February where it's like, hey, football's over, March Madness hasn't started, it's a wayward time.
I mean, honestly, not biased at all, I look pretty good in this hat.
I agree.
I pull it off. Thanks, Hank.
Yeah, I know, but it's like, it's just a weird thing to be... I'm not saying you don't look good. I'm saying it's
like
weird
when you shave your mustache.
But
or
wearing
dye your hair.
What?
Braids.
What are we talking about?
Willie Nelson.
Dyeing my hair. You think I shouldn't dye my hair?
No, when you come in with your hair dyed, that's the reaction I get. Same as me coming
You've
in.
You've never had that reaction.
Looking like Joe West.
No, but being an all the time cowboy hat guy is a totally different thing.
Yeah.
You become a different person.
Yeah, that's me.
Also, people were saying that you kind of jacked White Sox Dave style.
Oh, I've been wearing this cowboy hat for years.
Right, but he's the cowboy.
I'm Haas.
Okay.
Different.
Yeah, there it is. Are you high on Percocets?
No, I took half one. I took half one early this morning.
Yeah. The PFT Texas, that was another thing. You were like, hey, we should get a stylist.
That was a
Percocet idea.
Yeah, no one responded. No, everyone was like, what? Yeah. So we're just going to rip off Queer Eye for the Straight Guy?
No, I'm just saying, if we had... If we had a stylist come in and just dress us up,
that would
get us printed out.
That would happen for one video, and then we'd go back to normal.
Go back to wearing sweatpants
and
acting like we're 15 years old.
Exactly. That was the entire premise. And to be fair, the text was Percocet idea, because I was just getting out of the hospital.
Yeah.
And so, not to brag, I'm not taking this bracelet off for weeks.
Oh, so this is like the Cabo look.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Me and Billy, do you still have party bracelets on?
Oh, he doesn't even remember if he does. No, wow. We're totally sidetracking that Duke is the whole entire empire is crumbling, Hank. Coach K has nothing. He has nothing left.
It's a COVID year. I mean, people have kidney stones.
As a Duke,
you're coming
alum.
Off COVID. There's a lot of things going on in the world, and I think this is just a telltale sign. And also, people talking about Carolina is also unranked and probably not going to make the tournament either.
No one's talking about that.
And asking for opponents on
and
Twitter.
Exactly.
Yeah, because they want to play.
Yeah, they say anyone, anytime, anywhere.
Duke won't do that because they canceled the non-conference schedule. Remember that? When Coach K did that?
No, they still got those home wins in against Cotton
Great
State
point,
and Bellarmine.
Jake.
That
Great
was
point,
before they
canceled.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And then
so what I said is true.
They proved that they wanted non-conference.
I was just saying they got the...
Hank's not smart enough to realize what you're saying, Jake. So he just jumped on saying...
They did play non-conference games.
They canceled the non-conference schedule.
But not because of them not wanting to play non-conference games.
No,
because
they suck.
Because
they
of COVID.
Got the wins against Bellarmine and Coppin State.
Right.
Inflate the record right now.
No, he's saying it's worse.
Two of those eight wins are Coppin State and Bellarmine.
Stop saying right.
Which proves
Stop
that they were not afraid to play non-conference games.
Stop agreeing with him.
Thank you, Jake.
He's
very cool.
He's saying something that's anti-Duke.
Very cool.
What Hank doesn't even remember, but a couple years ago, this was, I think, even before the Zion thing, you said that you would get a cat if Duke didn't make the NCAA tournament.
Absolutely not.
You did. It might not have been on the
podcast.
Are
you afraid that Norman will impale the cat with his penis?
Yeah, probably.
I am too, actually.
It'd be like a sex doll for Norman.
All right, so are you, as a Duke alum, are you saying... that Jalen Johnson is a quitter. That's really the line on Twitter. The line on Twitter now as a sports fan, are you man enough to call a college basketball player a quitter?
He is a quitter. However, it's as like a He's as so like, as you know a Dookie, a diehard Cameron crazy runs in my
you
blood.
You got your JD and your bachelor's from there.
Yep. My film degree, everything. If they had a shot, even a chance, they're clearly not going to make the tournament. They're terrible this year. If it was like they were like even a bubble team or like close to a bubble team and he quit now, it'd be like, all right, fuck this guy forever. But now it's like he's a top draft
pick.
But
he probably wouldn't quit
if he got injured playing for a team that's not going to make the tournament. Like, that is really dumb.
You know what he did? To put it into terms that people can understand, he opted out of the Idaho Potato Bowl.
Right.
Okay? Like, I love the Idaho Potato Bowl,
Leonard
but
Fournette
it's
did the same thing.
It's okay if you opt out of the Idaho Potato Bowl.
He opted out of games that would just be meaningful for people that are on their couch betting on those games.
Correct.
Games that are not meaningful for anybody else, unless you're a big NIT fan, which I guess those exist. But now Duke, they might not even make the NIT.
That would be great.
That's
if they
the scuttlebutt.
What would happen if they went on a run here? Because what's our theory that when you lose your best player,
That would be the Bryce theory.
What was it?
The Harper.
Was it the Bryce Harper theory?
The Harperthesis.
Harperthesis. Yeah. When you lose your best player, you actually do better as a team.
Mm-hmm.
If they made the tournament, do you think you would opt back in?
I don't think you can do that. I think once you sign an agent and
I mean, Coach K doesn't really
if
follow
if he signs
the
an agent, he can't. But if he's uh-huh. just, like, chilling and taking classes, I think legally...
I'm sure he's going to...
Yeah, I'm sure he's definitely taking classes. Yeah. Yeah.
I do like that the debate is, like,
Jake
is this
student
guy...
student-athlete all the way.
Is like, this guy a quitter? Like, yes, by the definition of the word, he did quit the team. But he's... We have to rephrase it. He's an opt-outer.
Right.
He opted out. I like how now, like, anytime you quit something, you can just say opted out.
I just
it's way better.
I have.
I'm going to opt out of wearing a cowboy hat in a couple days.
I have his back simply because I didn't have any chance of going to the tournament. I wouldn't want to be berated by a senile old man and Coach K for the next month and a half.
No, not
that
at
sounds
all.
Miserable. Go make your millions, dude.
I mean, Coach K, he is going to opt out himself soon, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
Also, there is an argument like, oh, well, his teammates might be upset. Listen, if I were his teammate, I'd be like, dude, that's a good move because I hope that you make the NBA and you take me out to a steak dinner.
That's exactly what I was going to say. You can't be too upset because it's like that's your chance.
Yes. Yes. That's the first thing I think of. Everyone's like, oh, he's quitting on his teammates. Like, dude, do you think his teammates are really going to be like, hey, Jalen Johnson, lose my number, bro?
Right.
No.
I bet you Coach K has some weird rule for him. Like when he told Coach K that he was quitting, he was probably like, well, okay, I'm going to need your Duke-issued mm-hmm. Tops, your mm-hmm. bottoms, the mm-hmm. pen, the notebook that we gave you.
All the money
you.
That Jeff Capel gave you.
Yeah, I'm going to need every brown bag that you've touched in the last 6 months back
no
in my
office.
No
slander for Jeff Capel.
None.
Why?
Recurring guest of
Bench Mob. Yeah,
this podcast.
He's a monster.
No.
Yeah, Jeff Capel is
so
pretty much a monster.
We
got
to defend Will Wade now,
part of the family, yeah.
He was a very, very nice guy.
I don't even know what we're talking about anymore. I love this show.
This is
February, pardon my take.
I'm just very interested to see how Coach K spins this in the book that he's going to write in 3 years
yes.
about how this was actually his best season coaching.
Uh-huh.
Getting, you know what? I don't think that they've had – have they had any COVID on their team?
No, because they canceled the non-conference.
So Coach K,
playing games.
Coach K is going to say, like, this is actually his most successful season coaching
yes.
in his history. He's going to write a book about it and the chapter about Jalen Johnson opting out with Coach K is probably going to say, like, I advised him to because he's going to go to the NBA, make a lot of money. That's what we want first and
yes.
foremost. First is their health, and then secondly, we want them to get paid a lot of money. So I told Jalen Johnson to quit.
That would be the Cal line. Cal would be all in on this. All right, what else? Oh, J.J. Watt might be a Brown, which that would be the greatest move that he's ever pulled.
Oh, I would love it. If he goes to the Browns or the Bills, like, everybody who's not a fan of their direct rivals is going to be so happy about that.
I think he's got to do the Browns, though, because to play against his brothers.
So that's the only thing, is like J.J. playing twice against his brothers, that seems like a bridge too far.
He loves
the spotlight that goes on him when he plays against them once. Like, once a year would be perfect.
Mm.
But twice a year, it feels like that's a little... He doesn't want to put his parents through that, Big Cat.
Yeah. What were you going to say?
Did you see his Instagram caption, though?
What?
All gas, no brakes. That's Robert Saleh's line.
Sala?
It's Northwestern. Yeah. Spiros.
Anyway,
yeah.
Their strength coach,
Could be a little Jets action going on.
Oh, you think he's just dropping a little...
J.J. going to the Jets would be an all-time bonehead move.
Billy, how's the quarterback comps going?
Good.
Oh, okay. So you're really hard at work.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I still think he's going to go to the Titans, the Packers.
What's the timeline like on that thing? Like, when can we expect?
The comps?
I'm
working on Kyle Trask right now.
Okay.
Yeah.
So give us one thing about Kyle Trask.
He looks like me.
Yeah. Oh, he played at University of Florida.
He's got a sweet goatee.
I'm thinking Kirk Cousins.
Mm,
okay.
That's
okay.
A mid level.
Okay. Okay.
Tom Brady upside.
Okay.
Tom Brady upside, Kirk Cousins mid level, and then Paxton Lynch has his downside for every quarterback.
Marcus Russell. He might have a little of that in
him. I do think so. I was actually thinking about the quarterback situation because I know that your Bears have been linked numerous times, first by part of my take to Carson Wentz. But I feel like Marcus Mariota is the guy that nobody's talking about out there.
I think he's still under contract.
Yeah, but I mean, he's going to be – is he under contract?
I'm pretty sure. Because that's why I think people aren't talking about
him. I think he's available. Like, he's been – known to be available because they just re-signed Peterman, right?
I think they want to get rid of Derek Carr.
I've heard that Mariota is being mentioned in like trade talks, or I don't know if it's free agency. I need to look at his contract.
He signed a 2-year deal with the Raiders.
Here's what I would do though. If I were the Pittsburgh Steelers, I would trade for Marcus Mariota to sit behind Ben for 1 year.
I don't think Ben. What is it?
He's coming. He already said he's coming back.
What are you doing, Billy?
What?
You're breathing like Jose.
I have a
buckled, while you're just scrolling through.
I have a buckled septum. I can't breathe.
Okay. Big Ben has said he's coming back?
Yeah, he said like right after the season was over.
Oh, yeah, but back. I think there'll definitely be a conversation. I mean, that's Big Ben.
Yeah, there'll be a conversation. But, I mean, wouldn't it make all the sense?
They have to pay him like $40 million.
Yeah, but wouldn't it make all the sense in the world to get Marcus Mariota on the Steelers?
But wouldn't you want to just do it in a year when he's a free agent and not have to pay $10 million plus $42 million?
Probably. But in an ideal world, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm just thinking that like it would make sense for a lot of reasons for him to go to Pittsburgh.
Yeah, I just think that the Steelers are already in like cap hell because of Big Ben. So adding more salary at the quarterback position would probably not work. I feel like he trends on Twitter every other day.
Yeah. Big Ben's also negotiating against himself, though. Because in addition to saying that he's coming back next year already, he's like gone to the press and been like, I'm going to not take as much in salary next year. I'm waiting for them to come and talk to me, and then I'm going to like cut my salary in half. So Big Ben's already, he's pre-forfeiting
right.
like half of his salary.
And I don't even know if he can, I don't know how much more they can like push off.
I don't know.
I think this is the end of the line on the Big Ben number.
What if they...
Again, this is what they've been building everything forward, like, oh, this sucks now.
This is the Big Ben championship window?
Well,
yeah.
Like,
at?
This is... I mean, in the salary cap in the NFL is always just... Like, I feel like you can just make any move and then all of a sudden, oh, yeah, that money just doesn't exist anymore, or push it off. But I do know that the Steelers are in a pretty bad situation.
Yeah. The J.J. Watt free agency thing, though, it seems a little one-sided right now. I want it to be more like, remember when Peyton Manning was, like, taking his pick? Mm-hmm. He was getting flown to different cities. I want to see these teams making, like new Amazon headquarters type offers to J.J. Watt.
Yes.
I want to see like cities putting together packages with the key to the city for J.J. Like wine him and dine him a little bit. This is the only time that J.J. is going to make everything about J.J. because he's way too classy and low-key and humble of a guy to do something like that.
So Big Ben is this is his last year. His cap number is $41 million. That's significant.
That seems pretty high.
That's significant.
Yeah.
That is significant. That's a significant. They're $30 million over the cap right now.
We really blew it, by the way, when we were talking about cool hat guys by not mentioning Big Ben in the fedora.
Yes, one of the coolest hats when he looked like a booger.
That's actually a textbook, like, this is not a hat guy trying to pull off a hat moment.
Big
time. That's in the dictionary.
Yes. Everyone was like, dude, you can't do this. All right, let's do our hot seat cool tour. Anything else about Duke? Just, you know. Anything? Duke?
Yeah, I have one other thing.
Oh, yeah?
That was my hot seat.
Duke?
Yeah.
Do tell. What happened with them?
My hot seat was Duke. Jalen Johnson quit the season.
Oh, he did quit. He quit. Okay. Yes, he did quit. Okay. So it's official. He has quit on the team.
Did he quit on the fans?
Yeah, but they're not in stadium this year, so I think it's
a little
different. Yeah, he's not taking away from like the senior night or anything.
Yeah.
Okay, good. There's a lot of seniors at Duke that always come out. Tradition unlike
students.
Any other.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, let's get to Hot Seat Cool Throne.
With golf season in full swing, Chevy wants to help you make the most of every drive, and the all-electric Blazer EV's bold design and dynamic performance make it the perfect electric vehicle to get you to the course in style and comfort. Chevrolet, together let's drive.
Hank, Hot seat, cool throne.
I had two hot seats, thankfully, because I'm prepared.
Nice.
My other one was Larry King's ex-wife.
Yeah.
What happened? Yeah.
Wait,
which one?
Wait, the moment of silence.
The seventh one.
For Larry.
Seventh out of nine?
I think seven out of seven.
Oh.
I think.
I thought, okay, moment of silence. I thought he hit eight. I think he had seven because Tom Brady has as many rings as his wives do.
Oh.
So he...
That was actually like almost three full boots.
No, that's just a fact. That yeah, was, no, I wasn't I know, even
but
joking. That's,
no, but that is a Rick Riley
because we discussed it like a week ago.
Rick Riley would say rip Larry King. Uh-huh. His wives have as many rings as Tom
but
Brady.
He's also but like a gangster, that, yeah.
You got to give Rick Riley like at least 6 months.
Yeah,
because
no, no,
Tom Brady
no,
just
yeah,
won
yeah,
his
right,
seventh
yeah,
ring.
Yeah, yeah. And Larry King just died.
Right. He wrote. He updated his will on a napkin, basically writing his ex-wife his most recent ex-wife out of the will because she was banging their son's Little League coach like mm-hmm. all the time.
Power
hilarious.
So, totsied her. She kind of, she fucked herself.
I love
it.
Bill Belichick
a lot of money.
Just eat the napkin.
Cocktail. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's actually a great point. It's like, presumably his ex-wife found the cocktail napkin and she did the right thing.
Right.
She was like, she wanted more to brag that she was fucking her son's third base coach than mm-hmm. she wanted the money.
Mm-hmm.
So I take my hat off to her.
How much money did Larry, I think Larry King, did he have a lot of money?
Yeah, he was on TV for a bajillion years.
But he had seven wives.
How old was the last kid?
You like keep losing money every time you get divorced.
I'm pretty sure Larry King was the king of prenups.
Yeah.
Right? Like you learn after your third divorce,
so he
you
didn't
learn
even
to
have
make
to
that
write
airtight.
It.
Yeah.
So he didn't even have to write it on
he won. It was probably a spite move, which got I respect. It. Larry King, by the way, if you go back and you watch his interviews, like clips from his interviews in the 80s, 90s, he was the GOAT.
Yeah.
He was a GOAT. He was the Joe Rogan of his day.
Mm-hmm.
My cool throne is, I have a couple as well, Pac-Man Jones.
Mm-hmm.
He's back mm-hmm. doing Pac things.
Mm-hmm.
Got arrested for being in a fight.
Mm-hmm.
And Happy Gilmore.
Yes.
25th anniversary was today of it getting released. Adam Sandler did a video, just a simple cell phone video of him doing the Happy Gilmore swing. Very enjoyable. Brings a smile to your face. Shooting McGavin was chirping him. It's just a beautiful thing to see. It got me scared, though. I'm just going to, you know, pray for the purity of the internet and that he's just doing it to celebrate the 25th anniversary and not as, like, a future promotion for Happy Gilmore 2 because that would be sad.
Happy Gilmost.
Ooh. So I think Chaps pointed it out, but if you went to Adam Sandler's Twitter, it's just the obituaries. Every tweet is just R.I.P. something.
His Instagram
like,
as well.
Mix in a couple.
Like Bruce Arians?
But
just, Adam Sandler's the type of guy, though. He's not on Twitter. It's like, man, this is sad. I got to share my, you know, condolences.
Right.
That's the only thing that's worthwhile of him getting
I
on
know,
Twitter.
But it's big time bummer. Mix in mm-hmm. a couple, like, going to get Chipotle. Something like that.
I also I find it hard to believe that in 25 years, you haven't done the Happy Gilmore swing once.
He hasn't?
No, he said it was like the first time.
Got it.
Like he hasn't done it in 25 years.
I wonder if he
years.
Plays golf often. He probably does. He's going to pick up basketball.
I think once you get that rich, you like have to play golf.
Yeah, you probably do. Although he might be so rich he doesn't have to play golf.
He just owns the course?
He just has guys like, hey, we don't play golf. You just have to come and play pick up basketball with me. Like, oh, I don't play basketball.
For Boner Dogs production.
Yeah,
that's true.
Adam, all right, PFT, your hot seat, cool throne?
My hot seat is trading cards.
Yes.
Trading cards are on the hot seat big time. I know that some people have gotten really into collecting them recently, but they're getting cucked in a major way by a new trend out there. I think it's called NBA Top Shot.
Okay.
I'm trying to learn more about it because it makes no sense to me, but I'm also certain that there are so many suckers that believe in it that I can make a bunch of money doing it.
It's these hologram things, right?
No, they're selling video highlights.
Yeah.
Yes.
They're selling GIFs on the internet, and you can buy a GIF online. Somebody just bought
Spider-Man like $1,000.
Someone just bought like a 9-second video of Zion Williamson blocking a shot, and they paid $100,000 for it. It's a video you can watch on Twitter right now. It's on the internet. You can find it on YouTube, but they own that video on this website. And because they use the word blockchain when describing what they're doing, now it's worth money. I don't know, but they've figured out a way to monetize GIFs. And I think I'm in on it.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, I own Dogecoin. You own Dogecoin.
I'm heavily
leveraged. Yeah, I don't think we can
point at anyone and be like, how could you do this?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
We own a fake dog coin.
I made 900% investment on buying a dog
yeah.
that I don't own.
So I'm down for this.
Yeah, so I'm in
I'm not going to buy it, but I'll support it.
But it's weird to me, like, getting into the culture because you see that people are like, Windhorse wrote an article about it today. That's how you know it's really hip.
Mm-hmm.
And people were replying to the tweet, like, explaining how they're making money on it. And it's just, like, the biggest dorks that you could ever imagine. But they know something that I don't know.
Yeah.
So I feel like it's one of those things that I'd rather just kind of, like, be bullied into accepting as being the future.
I'm in on
than
it.
Try to fight against the windmills and be like, I'll never change. Yep. So, yeah. I guess gifts are...
Sounds cool to me.
Gifts are monetized now.
Yes, yes.
My cool throne is fucking at work.
Oh.
There was an MTA worker that got busted. They were a train conductor, and they were getting paid overtime on the clock, and they got busted fucking in the rail yard.
Ooh.
With one of their employees.
Okay.
And I actually think that if you work a blue-collar job, especially if you're a train operator, you should be allowed to have sex on the clock. You don't want someone who's dangerously horny to be driving your train. Like, you want someone who's mellow, relaxed, has that post-nut clarity. You don't want them getting, like, turned on when you go into a tunnel. You don't want the vibrations doing weird stuff. You don't want them going fast to impress the babes. So I'm all in favor of blue-collar workers being afforded a fuck break. You don't get a cigarette break anymore.
Yep.
Unless you fuck somebody just before it.
Mm-hmm.
So just let people have fuck breaks at work. It's
yeah.
the new trend.
Yeah, why not? The train conductors are people, too.
I feel like that's also something that exists in Asian cultures. Like
fucking?
Yeah, no. Yeah, trains? A lot of fucking. Well, I mean, China has the most people. But just, like, getting nap breaks or getting fuck breaks at work. I feel like a lot of Asian cultures have, like, hotels that are built into office buildings.
Nap pods.
Nap pods, exactly.
Yeah, it's like the Ohio State locker room. Remember when we went through there and there were the nap eggs?
Yeah.
That's, I mean... Everyone needs a nap every now and then. Recharge the battery. Mm-hmm. You recharge your phone, might as well recharge your body. Mm-hmm. All right, my hot seat is, so we talked about it. Carson Wentz is still out there. I think he's going to get traded. I have a bad feeling that Ryan Pace is behind this. I don't know if you've noticed, but like Colin Cowherd, Bart Scott, and I think Orlovsky all were like, if the Bears get Carson Wentz, they're instant Super Bowl contenders, which is not true.
Mm-hmm. Well, Orlovsky just loves Carson
Wentz.
Yeah,
but it feels like there's something going on. Something's afoot, and I would like to stem the tide. I don't think I can, but it feels like something's afoot here because the Bears are not a Super Bowl contender with Carson Wentz.
What if
and
you get that?
Especially not with like giving up a first-round pick for him.
What if you get that Carson Wentz, though, from 2017?
The other thing is like Eagles fans, I don't understand. They still have such an affinity for him. Like... I've heard the line, oh, I'm sorry, like he'd be the best quarterback in Bears history. Yeah, every quarterback would be.
Mm-hmm.
That's not a bar that we're trying. Well, like you could just name a name and he'd be like, yeah, he'd be the best quarterback in Bears history.
I actually understand where Eagles fans are coming from because anytime you have a quarterback that is like that good for a brief period of time, that's how you choose to remember him by.
Yeah, but at this point, it's over. So you should, don't. I would divorce myself from those feelings.
Right, but
very
quickly. It's tough to do. Like, I still think that Robert Griffin's going to win a Super Bowl one day,
yeah.
Even though I know that's insane. Like, a lot of Eagles fans...
No, I mean, I have the feelings for Cutler, yeah.
Because, like, that thought, that memory, those, like, 2-3 months exist in the back of your head where you're like, if he could get back to playing that way,
yeah.
Then, yeah, he'd be legit. But the problem
that's
is
a good point.
He hasn't been like that. I think most of them have accepted the fact that he's not going to get back to that point. But if you tell them, like, what if he, like, showed up this offseason, he came back for training camp and it was 2017 again, they instantly, like, get those feelings.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, he's the best.
Yeah. Either way, I think that there's something's afoot. And then my cool throne is LeBron because he would have been the best two-sport athlete of all time making a NFL roster. I actually believe him. That's not – I don't know why anyone would say, like, oh, LeBron couldn't make an NFL team.
No, he absolutely could.
Without a doubt.
You might go as far as to say, like, he is the best two-sport athlete of
all
time.
He's the best tight end of all time.
Yes. Just give it
to him.
That's actually
a
respect to Biz.
Yeah. Who's better than him?
I think I'd actually go as far as to say he's a better tight end than he is a basketball player.
He the high school tape
said he sports like, monetary yeah. reasons. Yeah,
the SportsCenter tweeted out like a high school highlight tape, and he wasn't even like scoring touchdowns. It was just like
he scored.
Him catching,
I think he set like an Ohio State
breaking
record for
one
the
pass
touchdowns.
And getting tackled like 5 yards.
If
away.
If he wanted to go play football right now, you don't think every team would give him a tryout?
Yeah, he'd be Tim Tebow. He'd just be, you know, there to sell tickets.
Yeah, because he was so good. I think LeBron James, we should say he's the best American soccer player.
Jake is showing me a clip of LeBron shooting from way too far away, being selfish. That's all I see. Oh, it's an air ball? Yeah. Oh, terrible shot. He literally pulled up from half court. I thought he swished it. He pulled it from half court and airballed it.
I do like, I think in high school he was actually listed as 6'9", 270, mm-hmm. playing wide receiver. So he was actually bigger. He was tall. That actually squares up with the fact that he loses weight and size during
yes.
games, remember?
Yes.
How much weight does he? No. He gained weight during one
weight.
Game.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Which I think was just a sweaty shirt.
Yeah, he was wearing a towel. Yeah. I do think, though, he would have been a very, very good football player. Don't have to dribble football.
Yeah.
You can travel all
tight
you
ends
want.
Usually aren't that big.
What? Gronk is a monster.
Yeah.
And LeBron's bigger than Gronk. Yeah.
I know, that's
faster.
What I'm saying.
No, he is probably too tall.
Right.
Yeah, no, that might be true. All right, Billy, do you
Gronk
have a hot seat?
Gronk gets hurt every day.
Hot seat beef. Bill Gates doesn't want us to eat steak and wants us to eat synthetic beef.
Okay. I saw that, and someone went viral being like...
That's not true.
The
author was like, it's not really what he said.
No, so the recommendation was if you eat three steaks a week and you decrease it, you will like greatly help the earth. And then someone was like, who the hell is eating three steaks a week? And I just did the Homer Simpson gif, like, I am for sure. Mm-hmm. We all eat three meals with steak in it, right?
Yes, three meals with steak in it. Andy Reid does that for dinner, right?
Yeah. Don't you, Billy, you do it.
Yeah.
I mean, this is just guy talk.
Just
right
letting
now.
The meat
like,
talk. Yeah.
Bro, we like
oh no.
It's I do chicken and then I do steak. And then I go back to chicken.
Pork.
Sometimes
Throw
mix
that in
pork.
There. Throw that in
but
there.
It's mostly just steak.
True.
And
I've
chicken.
Come to think about it, most of the salads that I've eaten have steak in them.
Whatever the opposite of a vegan is, that's what we are. Like, I don't remember the last meal I've had non-breakfast that didn't have meat involved.
Paleo.
Yeah.
Pizza.
Always toppings on pizza.
Pepperoni.
What are you talking
Sausage.
About?
Sausage.
Got it.
Cheese pizza.
No, cheese pizza? Okay, Verge. what do you say, Billy?
My cool terms?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Mardi Gras.
Oh, yeah.
Because
it's happening.
It's way too cold this year.
Oh.
But they also canceled it already.
Ah.
Okay.
So
you're not missing out on
two
much.
Two birds with one
Nice.
Stone.
Yeah, but nipples in the cold hit different.
Mm-hmm. Poke an eye out.
Damn.
Jake, what do you have? Hot seat, cool throw.
Hot seat is the Baltimore Orioles. So Fangraphs came
yeah,
out
I saw this.
with playoff projections of percentages.
Uh-huh.
And the Baltimore Orioles have a 0.0% chance to make the playoffs. And there's 162 games.
0.0%.
I mean, you have to bet it now.
It's incredible.
I'm smashing a bet yep. on that. Yes.
I mean, that just makes no sense. But I guess.
Lancaster City.
It's us against the world. Yeah.
0.0.
That's right.
0.0, I guess. And then Cool Throne is Bill's Mafia. We talked about the Australian Open last week. Some fun storylines. Yeah, developing. Serena's still in, and so is Jessica Pegula. She's the daughter of the Bills' owners, and she's having a Cinderella run right now. She's even in the first set, so she could be done by the time this podcast is out. But yeah, that'll be some story.
I love
And if it's her versus Serena in the final, it'll be Dolphins' owner versus Bills' owner, AFC East.
Okay. Serena's a Dolphins' owner?
She has some stake, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Got it.
I okay. like that, though. I think we have to root for the Bills, right? Bills Mafia?
Yeah.
Australia is... If Buffalo was a country, it would be Australia.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we're all in on Bills Mafia tennis version. What time do they play the Australian Open?
So they're 16 hours ahead of us. So they're just starting right now. It's 2 p.m. Rafa will be on, like, at 4 a.m.
Got any locks,
pass.
Jake?
I'm going to pass on what? The Australian Open.
You got any action for tonight?
No.
Any locks?
I'm going to pass on the Australian Open. Wake me up when Wimbledon starts.
All right.
Strawberries and cream, baby. Thing. Breakfast at Wimbledon. Not
Rafa doesn't lose.
Not fourth wheel in Sydney.
He's the king of clay, they call him.
Yeah.
King of clay.
Yeah. We're going to play this summer again, right? Nah. I won't get hurt?
Yeah.
Oh, I forgot you got hurt. And then Billy
More
made
of a
fun
tennis
of you
guy,
for
yeah.
getting hurt.
Mm-hmm.
Remember that, Billy? Billy is so checked out. Billy, are you just reading Instagram comments of a picture of you knocking out Jose?
No.
What the hell?
No, that's not, all I would do. For those guys at home, not.
Honestly, how long did you spend
and girls.
Like actually doing that? Seeing what people were saying about your knockout?
I just kind of logged off.
Yeah, sure.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Let's get to our interview.
Back on the ground.
Awesome.
Why wouldn't, like, what?
I don't know. I was
just, you didn't want to see people being like, fuck yeah?
I was just chilling.
Just right. Chilling.
You're a meme, though, Billy. That's what does it feel like to be a meme?
It's kind of crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well said.
Yeah, T-shirts are coming.
Yeah. Oh, okay, eventually. Nice. 3 weeks merch. After. Yeah. Yeah. Strike while the iron's hot.
All right. Before we get to Robert Ori, new sponsor alert from our friends at Noom. Think about everything you've ever learned about getting healthy. There's a lot of contradictory information out there, and things like that old-fashioned food pyramid aren't much help. You know how to chew. You know how to use chopsticks, kind of, and how to fold a slice of pizza so the cheese doesn't slide off and get that perfect first bite. But do you really know how to eat? Noom says if you want to lose weight, it's not about one thing you ate today, but how you eat in general. This is lifestyle changes, folks. You need the help to change the entire lifestyle. Think smart about your habits and how you're eating. What are you craving? All of that with Noom. You can ditch your misconceptions and get smart about food and the choices you make. Based in psychology, Noom teaches you how to eat so you can accomplish your personal health goals and stick with them long term, because you don't need rules to lose weight. You need knowledge. I actually signed up for Noom, and when I went through the whole process, they basically get inside of your head and figure out exactly what makes you tick when it comes to food so they can help you. It's not just like a, hey, eat this, eat that type of diet. They're really trying to make sure that you have long-lasting changes, not just a quick fad. It is something that you can take with you going forward. So make sure there's different goals you can set. It could be eating, eat better to feel better. It could be, you need more energy. You want to feel like you are confident in social climates, all that stuff. That comes with eating better. That comes with better habit. That comes with the knowledge that Noom is going to help you with. So, again, based in psychology, Noom teaches you why you make the choices you do, and then it gives you the tools to replace your habits with healthier one. Noom's cognitive behavioral approach means you're not just losing weight, you're building the habits you need to keep it off. Those are big words, so you know it's real. There's a science to getting healthier. It's called Noom, N-O-O-M. Sign up for your trial today at Noom, N-O-O-M. Did I do an extra O there? Noom.com/PMT. Learn how to eat again with Noom. Sign up your free trial today at Noom.com. Noom.com/PMT. Ready to learn how to live healthier? Sign up for Noom today. Noom.com/PMT. Okay, here he is, Robert Ori. Okay, we now welcome on a very special guest. It is 7-time champion. Big Shot Bob is who you know him as. He's got a podcast that you got to go listen to right now. It is Robert Ori. His podcast is on Podcast One. It's called the Big Shot Bob Pod, which, I mean, that you almost had to have a podcast because you have that nickname. Is that, let's just start there. Is that the coolest nickname to possibly have, to just be like, yeah, that's Big Shot Bob. He always hits the big shots.
You know what's funny? For a long time, I was like, I don't like the nickname. But then I realized, if you get a nickname, that means you made it, right?
Yes,
so
yes.
Either you can go the other way, but I kind of embraced it as I got on in life. And it's funny because when you meet other athletes, they call me, they be like, what's up, Big Shot? I'm like, do y'all even know what my real name is?
Yeah,
so, that's pretty cool, though. Yeah. Yes.
I read that you prefer Big Shot Rob to Big Shot Bob. Is that true?
No, it was actually my mom. My mom didn't want me to be called Bob. I don't care. I think Bob sounds better. But my mom didn't want me to be called Bob because that's what called my dad. And so she's like, you need your own identity. Say Big Shot Rob. I'm like, I don't really like Rob. So I did it as a joke. And then next thing you know, everybody's like, what's up, Big Shot Rob? I'm like, I kind of like Bob.
The background that you're on right now, for those listening, it's the ultimate flex. You've got 7 pictures of yourself, and I'm assuming that those are from 7 different title teams, right?
Yes. The funny part is I put it on my Zoom, and I don't know how to take it down. So, it's, but it's not a bad backdrop. So,
no,
yeah,
yes.
It's it's a significant moment in each championship. So, and that represents the seven rings. Yes.
So another thing that would that be, I assume, is great about the podcast is when you have guests on, you always have more rings than them, unless you have Bill Russell, right? Like, that's the only one that you can't have on and be like, listen, as a seven ring holder. So do you flex on your podcast guests when you have them on?
No, I don't flex, man, because I the picture's in the backdrop. So that kind of flexes for me, like you said. But it's weird that, you know, if you have Bill Russell on, it would be an honor to have him on my podcast, because think about it. Dude won 11 championships, man. You know how hard that is? I think he won 11 in 13 years, whatever it was. Mm-hmm. It's hard. You know, I only won 7 in 16. So, you know, it doesn't compare to his legacy.
Do you ever put all the rings on at once?
I did it once. I had some friends. I'm really good friends with Antonio McDice. And after we beat them in the playoffs, in 2005 when he was with the Pistons, he kind of came over for my birthday and I kind of had him on just messing with him. But I rarely put him on. You know, I haven't seen him in about 3 or 4 years because they're in the safe deposit box.
So talking about today's NBA, and we're going to talk about your career as well, because I have a bunch of questions for that as well. But the idea of peaking too early as a team. So right now, Utah Jazz are like on fire, absolutely on fire. You were part of 7 championship teams. You know what it takes to have a championship, you know, pedigree in that mix. Is there, from our side, because we're dumb, you know, sports fans that usually have bad takes, but we will say, oh, yeah, they're peaking too early. Is that a real thing? Like, is that, can you feel it when you're on a team? Like, hey, we have enough to do it when it counts. Don't worry about February and March here.
You know, peaking too early is, I don't know where it came from. Let's say if this was the Los Angeles Lakers on this run, would they say they're peaking too early? You know, what they say with the Bulls back in the day, or the Golden State Warriors, we don't know, are they peaking too early? No, it's just a team playing good basketball, and that's what it's about, because now they're put in a situation every night where it's do or die. What I mean by that is teams now want to beat you because you have the best record in basketball. It's not when you're like 4 or 5 in the road and it's all, we got to go to Utah, we're just going to phone it in tonight. But no, they want to beat Utah. They want to, and if they have a streak, they want to show them that they're not that good, because every NBA guy has pride. Every NBA guy wants to have that one notch in their belt, so to say, when they go out and beat a team that's the best in the West. And think about it. They're the best in the West when you got the Clippers, you got the Lakers, and you got Denver, and you got all these good teams, but they're on top of the world right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you played for some great coaches, honestly. I mean, like, when you think about coaches that are able to keep their teams locked in over the course of the season, Phil Jackson and Pop come to mind as, like, 1 and 1A. I assume that they had, like, different methods of making sure that their team was going to be locked in, because the NBA season can get really long. It's shorter this year, but it can be a long grind. What was the difference between those two guys in terms of how they kept the locker room loose, how they kept people focused in over the course of that long season?
You know, the thing about coaches, when you have a good team, you can just sit back and let the team take care of themselves. And you have great leaders. You think about when we were in L.A., Phil had great leaders, had B. Shaw, myself, and Rick, who kind of ran that team to keep Shaq and Kobe in line. So you have guys like that on your team that are strong-minded, strong-willed. You know, people always think because you make the most money, you score all the points, that you're the leader of a team. It's not always the case like that. It's the guys that doing all the scoring points, respect, because we've been in the league a while. I had won championships. B. Shaw had been there for the league. He played for a lot of great teams, a lot of great coaches. So we earn the respect of the players. So when you have guys like that, the coaches usually go to those guys and say, hey, get them in line.
Yeah.
It's not the big dogs, because the big dogs are usually too busy doing commercials, doing this kind of stuff to, you know. But for us back then, playing on Lakers, playing on Spurs, you had coaches that treated everybody the same. And that's another key, because, you know, you can yell at Kobe and you go on the end and yell at Devin Brown. And then you go and Pop, you can yell at Tim. Then go on the bench and yell at me. And it didn't really matter, because we know what was at stake. And when you have coaches that can respect the players and put the onus on the players to take over the team, they can pretty much sit back and say, you know, drive me to a championship.
So PFT mentions Pop and Phil Jackson, but you're on the record saying Rudy T was your best coach. Why was he better than those two guys in your mind?
I say he was my favorite coach.
Because
on a selfish reason, he ran plays for me. The other two didn't. So
that's fair. Yeah.
But no, because it boils down to, I love it for me personally. And I can only say, when you ask someone your favorite, my favorite, you know, I might like hamburgers, you might like hot dogs. So for me, my favorite was Rudy, because I love it when a coach comes to you and asks you, what's the feel of the game? What you see out there? And then when you get in the huddle, he looks at the guy and says, okay, what are we going to run? That's just a personal thing for me, because I know it feel is like, oh, we're going to run this, this, and this. With Pop, we're going to run this and this. And when a coach gets a feel from the team, like, you know, what do you want to run? You know, when I was with the Rockets, 9 times out of 10, it was like, hey, run 15 for Dream, and everybody go spot up and get out of the way. So, and you have to, for me, as a player, even when I was coaching my son's AAU team, we'd get in the huddle, and I said, yo, guys, what y'all want to run? And I remember the first time I did that, they looked at me like, you the coach? I said, no. I said, you guys got to feel, what are you comfortable with? What do you want to run? And they was like, well, let's do this. And after that, they would come to me like, hey, yo, coach, I can hear them talking. They can't stop this play. Coach, I hear them talking. They're having trouble with this. And as a player, you relay that message to the coach, and it's up to the coach to take the information and put it out. I'm not saying that Phil and Pop didn't do that, but Rudy did it more often than those two.
Yeah, you're the guy that you would alternate winning titles with, Steve Kerr. I feel like he does a pretty good job of that with having Draymond as like his dog on the team. You know, like, he's got the Splash Brothers, he had KD, but when it came time to like really crack some skulls, he'd like, you know, tell Draymond to go mix something up, and that would be the guy that kept everybody else in check. What did that look like for you if Phil was like, hey Robert, we need to make sure that Shaq is in line this week? Would he tell you to like just, I don't know, say like a snide, like smart ass comment to him in the huddle, or would he tell you like throw an elbow into Shaq, see what he does?
No, he'll be in practice like, we need to get in line. Shaq, you need to make your free throws. He would say things. Phil was the type of person, he didn't give a shit about anything. He just say what he wanted to say. You know, think about it. He called Sacramento cowbell town right before we played in the playoffs, and everybody in the arena had cowbells, and we couldn't even hear him coach. So that was the best, in the best game we ever had, because we just ran what we wanted to run. So, but, you know, he would come out and say stuff like, you know, we're not rebounding, and look at Shaq like, okay, you know, we're not doing this, and then look at Kobe, you know. And it was things that he would say, and then myself, Rick, or B-Shaw, or Derek would pull him to the side, like, dude, we need to work on this. I said, I know you're trying to do this, but this is our goal. You know, we would have, you know, this day and age, people always have team meetings. We wouldn't have a team meeting. We'd just say it in the locker room after practice. I'm like, there's no need for a team meeting. I'm like, we in here anyway, so let's just, you know, talk about it. We're on the bus. Let's talk about it. We had breakfast. Let's talk about it. Communication was the key to every team I was on. We talked about what we need to do. We talked about our faults, and we weren't afraid to tell each person on the team if they're slacking in a certain area and they need to get better, or, you know, even if it come down to a person, you know, not showing up on time. You know, it's about respecting the process and respecting the team.
I like what you said right there, because the second you have to call something a players-only meeting, you've already lost. It's like, if you're in a marriage, you don't say, oh, we should go to counseling this week. That should be like your ongoing conversation, should be like just having good communication. So that's interesting to know, like, yeah, if you have really good team chemistry, your season is one big meeting with your guys, and everything should be on the table like all the time.
Our team meeting is, hey, let's go to dinner, and if we got a couple of days between the next game, have a couple of drinks and talk about it. You know, it's just what it was. And I always want to hear these guys saying, oh, we had a team meeting. In my mind, team meetings are for losers, because right now you're floundering in the wind. You get ready to point some fingers, and people's feelings get hurt in team meetings. And you just talk about it, and you're doing it on a constant basis. You get used to it, so feelings don't get hurt. You know, I'm not going to say they don't always get hurt. Sometimes, you know, people get feelings, but, you know, it's for the benefit of the team. It's not about you. It's about we. And that's what a lot of times when you have guys who don't really care about the big dogs, you know, I laugh a lot of times. These guys will look at the big dogs when they make a mistake. They're scared of them. They won't say anything because they're afraid of being traded or something. I'm like, dude, you think I really care about being traded? As long as my paycheck still comes on the 1st and the 15th, you can trade me. Yep. You know, you're just going to be losing an exclusive asset. So, and I think a lot of guys just have to think like that and just voice their opinion, no matter if you're the top dog or you're the last dog, as long as that opinion is effective.
So speaking of that, and speaking of Draymond, I assume you saw his comments last night. You've been in a couple interesting situations. You almost got traded to Detroit right before the Rockets won their two titles, and then it went back because of failed physical. And you also got traded to Phoenix when Charles Barkley went to Houston, and you were in a situation that you didn't like. I actually was listening to a podcast coming into work today, you talking about how Danny Ainge basically admitted that he hated the Rockets, and like you guys got off on a bad foot right away when he was in Phoenix. But what did you make of Draymond's comments about like player empowerment and having a say in being traded, and you know, the imbalance that you see sometimes when it comes to owner versus player?
Well, you know, sports is always evolving and getting better and better. Draymond Green comments were right on point, because it's so funny how teams get mad at players when they ask for a trade, but when a team says, okay, we're going to bench you because we're trying to trade you, it doesn't make sense. And in this day and age, if you're not happy with a situation, you know, as a team come together, I know players sometimes should keep it in-house, and I feel like they should, but when a team comes out like that, that's wrong. You want a player to keep it in-house, you should keep it in-house. And at the end of the day, it's a business. And we always talk about tampering in the NBA. And if a team just says, okay, we're putting Blake Griffin on the shelf, who wants him? To me, that's tampering. You know, you're throwing that into the masses. Why can't you make a phone call to a GM and say, hey, I'm going to suggest this. But when a player says, oh, you know, I want to be traded, or I wouldn't mind playing with like this guy. You know, I would have loved to play with Sprewell on a team, you know, get that Bama connection again. So, but you can't say that, because you have that friendship, that bond, when you both was grinding to try to get to the NBA, it's a strong connection there. So guys just have to be careful in what they say, and it's not fair, but it's the nature of the business, and you have to deal with it.
What about in a situation like James Harden, where, you know, he signs a deal, they build the team around him, and then I think he admitted that he came in not in the best shape, wasn't really trying. Some of the last days in the Rockets, you know, it was hilarious. Visible. Yeah, it was hilarious and visible. But that seems like, you know, I don't really know what the solution is there, because he said he wanted to get traded, but he also, the Rockets have built something around him. So I don't know. That's a weird situation to me. That feels different than a Drummond or a Blake Griffin.
Yeah, every scenario is different. And in James' way, I think, you know, I love James as a player. I think he handled it wrong, because when a team, an organization does everything, you know, you ask for this, we give you that. You ask for that, we give you that. And now you ask for a trade. You already have a great relationship with that team. Go to them and say, hey, you know, I'm gonna come in and do my best for you, but I would like to have a trade. And these are my teams. And you think about it. If I was the owner, there's no way in heck I'm trading you to where you want to go. Yeah. You know, there's no way. And for them to actually still bend over backwards for this guy and send him to where he wants to go shows you what kind of art, how much love they have for him, even with the GM that did everything for him, was now in Philly.
Right.
So I just feel like the way that city embraced him, they embraced him better than they embraced Dream, and better than they embraced Mario Elliott, Kenny Smith, everybody who won a championship, T-Mac, they put their love and heart and soul in this guy because he was James Harden, and he did a lot for the organization, but he didn't bring a championship there. And so when you don't bring a championship there, you should respectfully go to the organization that's done everything for you and do it quietly. You know, in AD case, when he was in New Orleans, I figured, yo, you are benching me, not me benching myself. I want out.
So, right.
You know, every scenario is different.
Yeah. No, it's true.
We talk about the clutch gene a lot on this podcast. We're big believers in having the clutch gene. I think you exemplify whatever the clutch gene is. To you, like, what's it like? Are you in the zone when you hit those last shots, like at the end of a game in a big moment? What is it like? Walk me through the brain of Robert Horry when you get, you know, a kick out or like a tip out ball, game five against the Sacramento Kings. What's going through your head when you're hitting that shot?
So the scenario is it starts on the bench when they call a play, and it's not for me, but I'm the second option. So I know it's for me. And I don't know if that makes sense, because every team knows your plays. Every team cuts off your first option. So with me, it's a confidence builder that I know the play is coming to me. and the fact that I know my teammates believe in me, all I'm saying is, yo, it's like taking a walk in the park. Don't think about it. Catch, shoot, hold it, release, you know, all that kind of stuff. So I don't really think, man, you know, and it, I know it sounds weird, but every time the ball comes to me and I'm more comfortable in that situation because I know I have to take the shot. Mm-hmm. Usually you get a pass and it's like, you know, 10 seconds on the shot clock. You're always looking for that other option. I'm looking for Shaq. I'm looking for Tim. I'm looking for Dream. I'm looking for Kobe. I'm looking for Clyde. You're looking for all these different people. But when it comes down to that last second shot, you got to think about nobody but yourself. And so when that shot comes, I'm not thinking. I'm reverting back to those days when I was the man in high school. When I was the man in college, I'm taking a J.
Yeah.
So I literally think about nothing because it's just playing basketball. And it's just like, you know, getting up in the morning, like I always say, and walking to the bathroom. You don't think about going left, right, left. You just do it. And that's what I do. I just do it.
What about one of my favorite Big Shot Bob moments was actually a dunk. That left-handed dunk in the finals against the Pistons, Spurs Pistons. That one had to – you thought about that one. I mean, that one was different. That one was – you went left-handed and won. Who did you dunk on? Was it Tayshaun?
Rip Hamilton.
Oh, it was Rip Hamilton. Yeah. That one was like significant. That was not, you know, just shooting, playing in the back. Like you did that and there was malice behind that.
Well, I wanted to shoot the ball, but Bruce Bowen threw the ball at my ankles, which allows the defense to get out there. and it's weird because, you know, people do so many things when they play basketball where they don't think. It just comes natural. And for me, I got into that moment. And if you watch me in layups, I practiced that all the time. I practice taking off and trying to get to the rim and dunking the ball. I know I'm right-handed, but I broke my thumb in college, so I really couldn't palm the ball that well. So I always dunk left-handed because I can really grip it. And so for me, at that moment, I just get to the hole, and I just started taking off. I thought I took off too far out, which I almost did.
Yeah.
But for me, it was one of my favorite dunks of all time because – it was on somebody, it was in the finals, and it was during a key moment in game five where I was just lighting them up from outside. So it's good. If you look closely.
Is that there? Right here, yeah.
You can see the ghosting, that one.
Yeah.
You can actually see it. It's called ghosting, and you can see me dunking on.
Hell yeah. What's ghosting? Explain that to us. I mean, we know what it is, but our listeners might not know.
Well, ghosting is where they lightly put a, like, it looks like a ghost, and it's a light painting in the back of a drawing where if you look close enough, you'd be like, oh, is that? Yeah, so the last three pictures all have ghost moments in it.
Okay,
that's sick.
I like that. Like,
what about one has,
this one has shooting a three over Chris Webber, game four. Dunk, and that's me holding up seven championship fingers.
That's crazy. So the opposite of clutch, you were on the court for Nick Anderson. Well, what did you think I was going to say? Did you think I was going to say that?
I thought you were going to talk about my last shot as a Laker.
Oh, yeah. Well, you did have – I do wonder, like, you had a couple shots that you missed, the big shots. Was that – that must have been like, what the hell just happened?
Dude, you go back and look at the film and look at my face. When I missed that shot against San Antonio, that put us up 3-2.
Yep.
Going home. When I missed that shot, I've never been that dejected since high school. And it was, and you should have seen me talk to myself. If they would have had a camera on it, it would have been like, dang, this dude got a big ego. Because I literally said, I don't miss this shit. I don't miss this shit. You know, and I missed it. You know, I was so pissed off.
I don't think you made a three in that series. Not to bring up bad moments. You didn't make a three in that series, correct?
I didn't make a three all playoffs if you really want to bring up bad moments. I think I was 338. I just, you know, and the crazy part about that is I had an awful playoff series from three, and the Lakers thought I was washed up. So that's one of the reasons they got rid of me. They said, oh, but I'm like, do you realize that this is, I've won five championships at this moment. I played more playoff games than anybody on our team together. And my body just was tired. I went back and looked, studied the film. My jump shots were probably like an inch too short because I didn't have the legs. There's so many things. I remember one time, it was funny, Rick Fox fell right next to me. I was so tired, I just looked down at him and kept walking. And I was literally tired because also in that season, I went up from 23 minutes a game to 30 minutes a game. I know people said 7 minutes is nothing. 7 minutes is a lot of minutes in the NBA when you only used to playing 23 minutes a game to 24 minutes a game. So mm-hmm. it took me beyond what my body could do, and I needed a break.
Yeah. So the Nick Anderson, though, that how bad did you feel? Because that's one of those moments where you didn't at all. Even a little bit, like, holy shit, is this guy okay? Because that,
I was going like, yeah, that's what I'm talking about, you know?
But still, like, that is the opposite. I actually will, I'll count that for you. He probably saw Big Shot Bob, and, you know, you weren't all the way Big Shot Bob yet, but still, like, that is the absolute opposite of Big Shot Bob missing those free throws.
Yeah, we you know, we always talk about the sphincter got tight on that one, and for him to miss four free throws, and if you look at his career, his career was never the same after that. It was just, you know, and I love Nick. I used to love watching him in Illinois. I love watching him play. He was one of those dynamic guards. I remember when MJ came back that year, he locked up MJ. He did some fantastic things. And then all of a sudden, missing them those four free throws in a row and allowing us to win game one in their building, I think it hurt him, because every guy knows that confidence is the most important thing when it comes to playing a sport or doing anything. You got to have that confidence. And if you don't have that confidence, you're gone.
And he was like an 88% free throw shooter or something like that?
It's thank God Twitter didn't exist for that. That's one of those moments that he would have been roasted forever.
Yeah. Do you honestly think like Big Shot Bob standing next to Big Brick Nick on the foul stripe? You think that he felt that presence? He was like, I can't live up to this guy.
You know, I think realizing the role that we were on with the Houston Rockets, being in their building, playing them that close, you know, it was a lot of pressure. Now we're stepping up there, and he missed a two, but when he gets the rebound, he's like, oh, crap, I'm doing it again. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of thinking going in that process. Of course, you got Clyde Drexler talking trash to him. You got Kenny Smith talking trash to him. And then Horace with the goggles on just looking at him like, dude, come on, you need to make these, you know? So
eyes look bigger, yeah.
It was a lot of pressure on him.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think actually your most clutch play that you've ever had, it wasn't a shot, it wasn't a dunk, it was against the Suns mm-hmm. when you hip-checked Steve Nash, flipped the entire series. Like, you did a great job of hip-checking him, sent him into, like, the scorer's table, basically. But then in the aftermath of that, that worked out so much better than you could have ever planned. That Stoudemire comes off the bench. I think Rajah Bell came off the bench.
No, Rajah Bell was on the court. It was down.
Yeah, you gave Rajah Bell a little elbow in the face.
Yeah, so it was who else came off the bench then? I remember Stoudemire running out there.
Diaw, is it?
Boris Diaw. Yeah.
Right when you saw them come onto the court during the fight, how long did it take to sink in? Like, that's probably the best play that I've ever made.
You know what's weird? Some of the Phoenix Suns fans actually said I planned that. I'm like, damn, I'm a smart basketball player, but I ain't that damn smart. No, I can't predict what some guys are going to do. And for me, I didn't want them guys to get suspended because it didn't really affect the game by stepping on the court. Mm-hmm. And I know people look at me and say, no, because you want to win. You know, everybody said, well, if they would have got suspended, this would have happened. This one has, you know. And I look back, I can say this now because I can't get fined. If you look at how Steve Nash got treated in that series and how they was loving him and giving him every freaking call, that was one of the reasons why I was so frustrated when I went over there, because they gave Steve Nash every call. I'm like, are you serious right now? I'm like, it was so frustrating when you can clearly see that the calls aren't, you know, equal. I know people are going to say, stop hating. I said, no, but you know.
I think what people are going to say is, I think they're like, Kings fans are going to hear that clip and be like, are you fucking serious right now?
But here's the thing. Kings fans don't realize in game six, they got all the calls. They got some calls where Bibby traveled. They got some calls where he went out of bounds and they got the ball back. So the Kings fans have no right to say anything.
I don't know.
You know, they want to talk about the foul, because you can go back and look at the fouls. You know, all the fouls were maybe one or two that was questionable. But for the most part, don't be mad, because Vlade started messing up down the stretch. Chris Webber didn't want to shoot the ball down the stretch. So we can't control that. The refs had no control over that.
Tim Donaghy was the ref. He was in the Suns series, too. He was. So actually, let's talk about that shot. I alluded to it earlier, the one against the Kings. That one, I got so mad at you after you hit that shot because I was with some friends. We had bet, I don't know, probably like $5 or something stupid on the game because I was in high school at the time. But I was so mad at you because you're 6'10". That's the last shot of the game. They're driving to the basket to make that shot. You should be crashing the boards. What were you doing standing outside the three-point line just hoping a miraculous tip-out would come to you?
I'm going to walk you through the play. The play is called What the Fuck. No lie. And I'm inbound the ball, and I'm supposed to set a pick on Kobe, and Kobe's supposed to come off. If my defender went with him, he's supposed to kick it back. And so he had the alley to the he had the lane to get to the rack. He missed it, and it came off. So I'm still out there because I know Kobe has hit me so many times at the last moment. So I'm just standing out there waiting on the ball. And it was no need. And also, you guys think about, I'm supposed to be the man that gets back on that play. So I'm thinking about that, even though I'm like, okay. And then I'm also thinking they might tip it out because if they can't get the rebound, you tip it out. It's too crowded anyway. It's 7 footers in there. So I'm out there chilling, waiting. So all these scenarios are going through my head. And people say, well, why are you out there? I said, even Fish was outside the three-point line. Nobody talks about him hanging out there. But and the crazy part, it was a perfect tip out.
Yeah.
It hit me exactly where I love it. And you know, I raised up and knocked it down. And I tell people all the time, I said, we would have never been in that situation if Phil would have ran some plays for me because I was hot that game. I'd already just made 2 threes from the corner, but I had no plays ran for me. So it was one of those moments, you know, that kind of solidified me being Big Shot Bob. Yeah, so it was a great moment. Especially doing it in the Laker uniform, man, on their floor.
Yeah,
so.
It's perfect that it's called What the Fuck because that's exactly what I said.
Yeah.
Brad, that's probably the only words that I said for 10 seconds after you hit that shot.
The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
And now, here's more Robert Horry.
So speaking of the Lakers, the Shaq-Kobe like beef, how tense was it at times? Was it awkward for you guys in the locker room? I read part of the book, the Jeff Perlman book. And Kobe, obviously, like maybe all-time competitor next to like Michael Jordan in terms of how serious he was and how serious he took it. Was it overblown by the media, or was it real that there was tension all the time?
You know, I haven't read his book, so I have no clue what he said. But
I'll tell you one funny story. There was one story that you were drinking a beer, and it was Kobe's rookie year, I want to say, and he came up to you and was like, why are you drinking? We have a game tomorrow. And you were like, I'll be fine. Don't worry about it.
He said that to me?
Yeah, Kobe said that to you.
No.
Okay.
That is such, you know, I always laugh at people who write stories and that wasn't really there. I'm not going to call his name up. I remember a guy talking about, we had this thing where, you know, we do this with Kobe. We weren't passing the ball. And someone else was telling that story. And they weren't even on the team. Like, why are you telling that story? You don't even know the background of that, if it's true or not. You're going by hearsay. Let one of us tell the story.
Right.
But, you know, the thing about it, Kobe was a rookie at 18. They took the beer out of the locker room because he was 18. So nobody was ever in the locker room drinking a beer. And Kobe got his seriousness from us, from B. Shaw, myself, and Rick, because we came to practice to play and we came hard. You know, and everybody – think about it. His mama mentality came when Rick, D-Fish still, me, the guys who were workhorses, after we left, he learned from us. And so his mama mentality wasn't during the three-peat. It wasn't doing that. It was after that where he got these knuckleheads with him that didn't know how to play.
Yeah.
And then come to practice and
Smush
take a
Parker.
Seat. And see, now, yeah. So now he had to have this mentality. So back to what you were saying is like, it was weird because we would be in practice. They were on the same team. They would compete. You know, the second team would kick their ass. Kobe get mad, wouldn't talk to the second team for a while. But I never saw any beef with Kobe. and Shaq on the court, even when they was on separate teams or in the locker room, because when we done with practice, everybody goes to the locker room. We sit down, we ice our knees, we sit there, we shoot shit.
Right.
And that's when you know when some guys come in, you be like, oh, I ain't messing with that guy. Oh, he said this about me. It never happened. And I never saw it. And I tell people all the time, if I don't like you, it's some guys I played with and I won championship with. At the end of the game, I ain't hugging your ass when we win a championship. I avoid you because I'm not going to give you any fake love. Why is it that every time we won a championship that those two guys were the first to hug? I don't understand it, but it is what it is. And maybe I was blind to it. I can only speak for myself, but I never saw any beef. I never saw it in the locker room. I never saw it on the practice court. Never saw it on the bus. Never saw it on the plane. So I can't even, you know, I know y'all probably say, he just don't want to give us the juicy stuff, but I put that on everything. I never saw it.
No, I mean, it's fair that the media, you're basically saying the media overblows stuff. No way. They do that. We do that all the time. Yeah. We always do that.
Like, it's my job.
It's way worse now than it ever was. I mean, imagine if it was today. We pick apart every guy's every move, whether it be social media or on the court, and like every mood and look. I mean, I want to bring it up, but like you throwing a towel at Danny Ainge, could you imagine how that would lead every show on ESPN? You know what I mean? Because that type of stuff gets picked apart. People be like, Robert Horry, bad teammate, bad guy. Like that's,
yeah.
And I've heard you tell the story, but that was a bad place and time for you in Phoenix, right?
You know, the thing about it is people don't understand. I never liked Danny Ainge. Because Mario Elliott is one of my best friends. And for you to point blank range and throw the ball and hit Mario in the face with it just because you're getting your ass kicked is just, that's just really unsportsmanlike. And for him, and when we first got there, I remember it like it was just that him, myself, and Sam were walking down the hallway. And he says, yeah, I did that shit on purpose. And me and Sam looking at him like, dude, are you really just going to tell us that? You know, you realize Mario, and at that moment, I never liked him. You know, and I didn't respect him then. And then Cotton, God rest his soul, he was a coach. And then he quit on us. And then, you know, Danny took over. I'm like, me and Danny had already had beef because I'm going to tell this story. We in Chicago, and we're trying to run the triangle like Chicago. I think we get beat by 30 points. It's like 130 to 100 or something. And so we have practice in Chicago the next day, and – you're talking about this. He's like, oh, our offense needs to do this. Our offense needs to do that. And I was like, yo, excuse me. We always talking about offense. Our defense suck. We need to work. And then Danny Ainge had the audacity to say I was the worst defender on the Phoenix Suns. We talking about Kevin Johnson. We talking about Wesley Person. We talking about Danny Manning. And I'm not going to talk ill about Wayman Tisdale, but he was on the team. Think about this. This was a team of non-defenders. You talking about me who had 100 steals, 100 blocks, and 100 threes, the first guy to do that. And you tell me I'm the worst defender on the team, so I go off on him, right? I just tell him all. I said, dude, are you serious right now? And I pointed Wesley Person. I said, you say I'm the worst defender? This dude can't guard a damn snail. And so and 2 days later, he becomes the coach. And then I'm starting at this time. He benches me. And on top of that, it's my first time back in Houston.
Yeah.
And I didn't get to start. You know how guys are. We don't want to say this, but you want to feel that love from the fans.
Right.
So he benches me in Houston. And after that, it was downhill from there. And it was just a bad moment. So, and as soon as he became the head coach, I should have just, you know, at that time, guys didn't use it, unless you was a top tier guy, you don't go ask for a trade. You kind of just deal with it. I should have just went with myself and went to the organization. Yo, I can't play for this man. I want out. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't like him. He don't like me. Let me out of the situation. But I'm glad I did what I did because it sent me to the Lakers.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you wish that you had thrown something you wish you had thrown something heavier at him?
No, because then I might have been caught up on charges. Hey, and I did it in Boston where he's loved by the masses there. So, yeah. No.
Maybe soup. Maybe you throw soup at him next time.
Cedric Sabalas was on a jet ski or something and missed like a – like you have to admit there are
moments in your career, I'm sure you've seen, like, looked at it and been like, all right, I won 7 rings. I also had some pretty good things go my way in terms of luck, like Cedric Sabalas being on a jet ski, screwing up his contract in the Lakers, and then you get traded.
He went to go party in Lake Havasu.
Yeah, that's right.
That's the first thing I ever found out about Lake Havasu. And I'm like, thank you. Think about it. You know, Sean Elliott, I love him as a person, failed his physical. Then this happened. And then, you know.
Tim Donaghy refs your series against the Kings. And then you hit check Steve Nash.
Yes. So, you know, I am a master planner. I plan all of them. I plan it all.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, you're in the right place at the right time all the time. Are you just a lucky guy in general?
You know, God has blessed me with a lot of talent and a lot of smarts and a lot of luck. And I think about it. I never lost in high school. I won a lot in college. Well, I won't say I never lost. I won a lot in high school. Won a lot. I never was a loser. And when I got to Phoenix and we started season up 0-13, I didn't know how to handle that because I don't lose. You know, even when I guarantee you, we play cards or dominoes right now, I'm gonna kick your ass because I don't lose. It's just I just have that rabbit's foot built in, and so it was hard in that situation, and it's hard sometimes to not sit back and think that because I also think about, since, you know, God blessed me with a lot of talents, and He did put some obstacles in my way. You know, referring to my daughter and her passing. That, you know, as lucky as I was on the court, I wasn't so lucky off the court. So I think things happen for a reason, and you just have to, you know, step up to the plate and grab and seize the moment.
I'm also a big believer in making your own luck. If it happens, if you get lucky on the court one time, that can be explained away by luck sometimes. But if it happens repeatedly, it's a lot of little things that you've done over the course of, you know, a really long period of time that all add up to make those, you know, those small percentages turn into bigger percentages when you see them on the biggest stage. I think that's what we see with you. I just looked up.
Love the quote, by the way, of I'm not a loser.
I'm not a loser.
And being like, you're not a loser.
Yeah.
You actually, correct. You can confidently say,
Jake, can you fact check
that? I am not
a
loser.
We're going to have our sports biz guy fact check that you're not a loser.
Because a lot of people could be like, I'm not a loser, but like, yeah, you are, dude. Uh-huh. You can say, I'm not a loser.
Seven-time
like,
NBA champion, NBA all-rookie team.
Okay, not a loser.
But I have some pencils that were made for me because I had a quote and I said, winners don't take no shit.
Yep.
And because I was talking about, you know, moments in the basketball where you know, winners don't take no shit. Mm-hmm. And so all of a sudden I get a package and there's a bunch of pencils that said winners don't take no shit. And so my son tried to take one to school. Like, are you crazy? And he was only like 7 years old at the time.
Yeah.
So it's, you have to be in the right moment and winners don't take no shit.
Yeah.
I think Sean Connery said that in The Rock too. Yes. Nick Cage. I'm pretty sure that was a line of dialogue there. Well, it's awesome to talk to you, man. I think that's about it for me.
No, I had a couple more questions real quick. So who did you give more shit to? Ty Lue when he got stepped over or Tim Duncan when he showed up to the arena every day dressed like Tim Duncan?
Hey, you know, Ty Lue, you know, he was just on my podcast and we talked about that. And have everybody thought he got crossed over. I'm like, he says he don't care because that step over made him famous. So I laughed about that. But you got to think about Tim Duncan. This is a dude at one time was top three moneymakers in the NBA.
Yep.
And he dressed like he was straight out the trailer park. I'm like, come on, Tim. I would mess with him all the time. I said, dude, baggy jeans. I said, come on now. I said, you can spend your money on clothes. You don't have to spend it on video games and cars. You can buy a suit. Think about this dude. I don't even think this dude owns a suit, man. And we always talk about people who have every dime they ever made in the NBA. This dude probably has every dime because he damn sure didn't spend it on clothes. He didn't spend it on jewelry. He didn't spend it on – he might have spent it on cars. But other than that, that dude didn't spend no money, especially on clothes. He probably have a closet probably about – big as a shoebox with three outfits in it. So,
yeah,
I feel like it's all the same
terrible shirt.
It's
Sam's Club.
Yeah, the black and white striped shirt from Caldor that he got for 15% off.
Hey, I guarantee that's why he stopped coaching because that one black jacket that he had probably fell apart.
Yes.
I did like his jeans, though. He was a legend of the flat front. He ironed his big jeans, too. Mm-hmm. They weren't even properly baggy. They were, like, just straight down the front.
Yes.
Hey. I wear baggy, zip, snap, and drop.
Yeah. I did want to ask you, actually, that Big Cat brought it up, about that Spurs team, because they were they were a fascinating team at the time. They brought you on. They had Tim Duncan. I think it was Ginobili's second year. Tony Parker was getting into the mix then. It was like one of the first international teams. What was that like? Do you think that there was actually like a benefit to having a bunch of players that might not have spoke English as their first language, only being able to communicate the important stuff with each other and not communicating like all the rest of the bullshit?
Well, trust me, those guys spoke really good English. And I think for us, it allowed Pop to just have plays. You know, he just hand signals. And the bad thing about that, he would do a hand signal. And if you're taking the ball out, your back is to him sometimes, so you miss it. And I remember one play, we're in the heat of the moment, and Manu's bringing the ball. I'm like, what's the call? And he starts speaking Spanish. And I looked at him like, yo, what's the call? Like, dude, I don't speak Spanish. I'm like, so you have those moments where those guys revert back to their first language. But Manu, phenomenal player, excellent player. You know, Tony was one of those players who took him a while to understand his speed, you know. Your speed is going to be who you are and relish it, because he tried to do things that he wasn't good at. I'm like, no, you scored more points in the paint than anybody in the NBA for like 4 years. You know, even Shaq and, you know, Garnett and all these guys, Tony would get in the paint and shoot his teardrop. So I said, do what you do best. And because, you know, everybody started trying to shoot threes. I'm like, dude, that ain't you. You got Ginobili for that. You got Turkoglu for that. You got me for that. Do what you do. Get to the middle of the paint, shoot your teardrop, you don't kick it out. And those guys were just phenomenal players. And I think what made them good is because they started at such a young age playing against professionals. I think that's the thing that's probably going to help a lot of these guys in the G League, that now they're going straight to being professionals at such a young age. And the only thing, the difference in the foreign players, that they go to school for that.
Yeah.
You know, you go to school for 3-4 hours, and then they go to basketball for 10 hours. And so they learn the game against men. They're perfecting the game. And that's why you see so many international players, when they come into the NBA, they're ready, because they've been playing against grown men since they was 12.
Yeah, it's a good point. It's a very good point. It's also changed a lot, I think, that the international guys, like it used to be they were all soft, or that was the tag. And it's changed a lot. I think that a lot, like you said, a lot of guys, you know, look at Luka. Luka was playing at the highest level in Europe, and then he comes over ready to go.
Well, let's be real here. If these guys would have came in during my era, they'd still be soft.
Yeah,
because it was a different era where guys were, you know, you wasn't running over to the monitor because some guy said I got hit in the head. Oh, we got to see if this is a flagrant one or a flagrant two. You know, you get hit upside the head, it's just about playing basketball. You know, some things are done maliciously and some things aren't. And I hate every time something happens, they run over to that monitor to check it out. It's basketball. Guys expect not to get hit now. And it makes me so mad now when you see these guys, they always like, oh, I got hit in the head. Look at the video. I'm like, dude, it's basketball. You're going to get hit.
Right.
And, you know, I cover the Lakers. I watch Montrez. He never complains. He gets hit in the head twice a game. And he just plays. So he's the type of guy that'll be able to play in that league. But these other guys, every time they get hit, they want a flavor. I'm like, really, dude? Stop it. Just play basketball and enjoy the moment.
Yeah, and sometimes guys do it to a detriment where they're looking for contact. They don't finish a play. It's like they're looking for the foul before, like, get the and one. You can finish the, you know, play through contact and then hope you get a foul call.
It's so weird because now I watch basketball. You know how these guys lunge into players that jump now?
Yep.
That was all charges for when we played, because it wasn't your natural shooting motion.
Yeah.
And and we talk about the high scoring in NBA. I want to see if they stop calling that call, what would the scores be? Because now we want the game to be moving, speed up. This slows the game down, because every time a guy jumps, you jump into him, you get the call. I'm like, come on, Alan, let's talk. Let's just take that out the game, because to me, I like the way the game is played now, but I don't like that part where you can jump in the air and a guy lunges into you and you get the call. So
it would never change, though. Isn't Chris Paul like the head of the players' union? Like, I mean, that's like his favorite move. He would never let it happen.
That's the rules committee. He has nothing to do with that. So, you know,
it's true.
Just like back in the day when the NBA had this crazy idea to change the basketball because people was, oh, you can't use leather and all this kind of stuff.
Oh, I remember that.
Terrible basketball.
Yes.
all you had to do was spin it really hard. It would stick to the backboard and drop in. So I'm like, really? Come on, man. We can't do this.
Yeah, unders. I bet unders that year because everything sucked. You guys did it for like what? Like it was. It wasn't even a
couple
full
months.
It was like a like 30. Yeah, 30 or 40 games, and you're like, this is crazy. This basketball. It was so sticky. You could see how sticky it was.
You can dunk on somebody in a minute because you can grip it as easy as possible.
You can grip with your right hand.
They need to have, like, Adam Silver's done a great job, I think, in most facets moving the game forward. But they need a guy like Robert Horry on the rules committee, like an old school guy, the last of the hard, to be like, we can't let this get too out of hand. Let's keep some of the toughness in basketball. Is there a guy out there that you watch and you're like, that's a guy that, like, a baby Bob that you see out there, you're like, that dude reminds me of me when I got into the league.
Well, you know, it's weird because I look at Kuzma, same height, you know, he's a little bit more athletic than I was. I think I jumped higher than him, but he, as far as handling the rock, I was the type of person like, dude, handling the rock taking too much energy out of me. I don't want to do that. I just want to come off the screen, shoot, spot up, shoot, drive, do this, two or three dribbles, dunk on somebody. So I look at Kuz and the way he plays, and that's the only person that's out there that I really, you know, look at and think that reminds me of me, because everybody else is, you know, they're just 3-point shooters. They're not dunkers, and Kuz a dunk on you.
Yeah. All right. My last question. So you played. I mean, you're basically a walking history book for the NBA. You played in so many key series, so many great championship teams. You played with, I mean, off the top of my head, Kobe, Shaq, Tim Duncan, and Hakeem are probably four out of the top 25 guys in NBA history. Who is the most unstoppable guy you played with?
Play with?
Yeah.
Unstoppable Shaq, by far.
Okay, I was hoping you were going to say Hakeem just because I loved the Dream Shake. Oh, I love watching him do
if
that.
If I'm going to pick somebody on my team, I'm taking Dream.
You are? But, okay.
Yeah. But when you say unstoppable.
Yeah.
When Shaq got in shape, think about it. The year he won MVP, he was unstoppable. And it wasn't like today where you might have, you know, four centers in the league. He had a bunch of centers they weren't just skinny centers like they are. They were guys with some girth to them. You know, you think about Vlade, you think about
Greg Ostertag. Yeah.
Yeah. All those guys were there with bodies to try to, and he just, you know, dominated him. I think some of the time when he used to dunk on Dikembe, I'm like, ooh, you know, and I was like, that 1999-2000 Shaq was probably the most dominant player ever in the NBA because he was in shape, he had no injuries, and he was scared of Phil, and so he wanted to win a championship.
It is crazy to think about, like, when you go through some of his game logs when he had those stretches where he'd be like 40-20 every night in the playoffs too. Wait, what do you mean he was scared of Phil? How was he scared of Phil?
You know, when you get a new coach, you try to impress him, so you come in shape. So I mean, he was just, all of us. It was weird. That's the first time I've seen a team where everybody was in shape when they came into the season. You know, sometimes you'd be right there on the borderline. You know, two or three more days, you're in shape. But you look across the board. You know, Kobe had put on 15 pounds, all muscle. Shaq was in shape. I was in shape. I had put on 10 pounds of muscle. It was just everybody was just in shape and ready for that season. So,
yeah. Shaq was usually a big, I'm going to play my way into shape over the course of the first couple months. What do you think the heaviest Shaq was when you played with him?
I think it had to be my last season when he missed the beginning of the season because with his toe problem. He had surgery on his toe right before the beginning of the season, and he was out like 2 months. And so – Shaq, I think he put on about 15 to 20 pounds. And I think for me, I look at his body from that moment on, it was never the same, because I don't think he was able to get to that elite status again because of injuries and things of that nature. So that toe messed him up from being, you know, a dominant force for 6 or 7 more years.
I'm looking at it right now. It's so stupid to look at. In that finals against the Pacers, 43-19, 40-24, 33-13, 36-21, like every night. This actually just reminded me though of one last question. One of the funniest random things that I just remember from watching the NBA as a kid, Ruben Patterson claiming that he was the Kobe stopper. That was the dumbest thing I've ever seen. I can actually visualize it. NBA on NBC. They're coming in. Ruben Patterson's got his feet in an ice bucket, and everyone in the Portland Trailblazers locker room's like, Kobe stopper, Kobe stopper. Were you guys like, is this guy fucking for real?
You know, the crazy part about that is, Ruben, you used to play for us. You used to try to guard Kobe in practice. You couldn't guard him in practice. And when he wasn't going hard, you think you can maybe guard him in a game? Are you serious right now? You know, Ruben had a big ego. When Ruben came in as a rookie, he thought he should have been starting. He didn't, you know, rookies always supposed to do stuff like bring your donuts or bring your coffee or bring your paper. You know, I know people are like, what's the paper? But he's supposed to do these things. So, you know, Ruben had that ego and that attitude like, yo, I'm from Cincinnati. I'm this bad guy. I can do this. So he never did what he was supposed to do as a rookie. So one night in Sacramento, we said, okay, we're going to show you how rookies get treated. We got a bunch of athletic tape, taped him up, put him on a luggage cart, put him on the elevator, and hit all the buttons. And so we just left him there.
I'm happy I asked about that, yeah.
So that is the Ruben Stopper story. Like, you don't want to respect us vets? Here you go. We got something for it. And I think the funniest part, just I felt bad. This little old lady, you know, she's about to get on the elevator, and she saw him like this, all like tied up, and she's like, ooh, it's scared her. We're like, we sorry, ma'am. It's a joke, you know. And she got all scared. So, yeah, you know, that's one night in Sacramento.
Yeah, that guy called himself the Kobe Stopper. He had a lot of confidence to call himself the Kobe Stopper. I'd imagine that pissed Kobe off. All right, well, Robert, this has been awesome, man. We really appreciate it. Everyone go listen to Robert's podcast, Big Shot Bob Pod. Anytime, we'd love to have you back on, man. I'm sure we scratched the surface with stories.
It was a pleasure, man. You know, I think y'all, you know, put me in my podcast. The good thing is I got Mark Cuban on tomorrow. So, you know, he's always a blast. So
friend of ours.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. We've had him on a bunch of times. He's so
gonna
everyone run knows for, how good he is.
He's
going
to run for president.
Yes.
I asked him about that. So, yeah, listening.
Mark loves saying that he's not going to run for president. There's nothing that Mark loves more than being asked to run for president.
Yes. Hey,
when you have that much money, you can run for whatever you want to run for.
Yep.
Yes. Well, thank you so much, Robert. Really appreciate it, man.
Take care, man. It's a pleasure.
Thanks, dude.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
All right, let's wrap up. We got Guys on Chicks. Send you on your way. Middle of February, Valentine's Day was Sunday. Sunday.
Yeah, it was President's Day yesterday.
President's Day was yesterday.
Two days ago.
Oh, yeah, 2 days ago.
Oh, Lunar New Year. We talked about that a lot.
Yep. Now we're just naming holidays. Mm-hmm.
It's my old neighbor's birthday was on President's Day.
Fuck yeah. Shout out.
Yeah.
Matt.
I feel like
shout
Matt?
Out Billy Tibbetts.
No. I don't know when his birthday is. I wish he was. Actually, I'm happy he's not my neighbor. Then he would know where I lived. Every time I tell my boyfriend that I love him, he just squints into the distance like George Costanza. Do you think this is the end of our relationship?
It's not good.
He might be deaf.
Yeah, say it into the other ear.
Yeah, what?
We're gonna go
I think
with
that was
the
Seinfeld episode,
route.
Too.
Yeah, right.
It is.
If he's never said I love you back, then, yeah, I think it's probably a good sign that you aren't meant to be. That's so weird to... How do you not reflexively just be like, I love you back?
Yeah, you just gotta lie.
Yeah. I love you so much. That's why I came so fast.
I want to spend more time with my boyfriend, but he always gets mad when I ask him about rules. He always gets mad when I ask him rules about sports. Should I just cheat on him?
Oh, okay.
That was do not pass go. Go directly to like what?
There's no middle ground in this. Like he gets mad when you ask him rules about sports.
So suck his friend's dicks.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I actually
don't see another way.
Now
out of
that I'm saying it. Like, you should, okay, if we're going to be totally fair here, you should at least tell him, like, hey, next time I ask about offsides,
Try not to be a condescending asshole about it. Otherwise, I'm sucking Billy's dick.
I think that's totally fair. If you give him a heads up, he can't be mad about
Correct.
It. Like, guys operate on actions and consequences.
Also, maybe send Hank your boyfriend's name and address so we can become friends with him.
Okay. Sup, boys. I'm a flight attendant, and after being off most of 2020, I'm going back to work. I have to do training this weekend in Dallas. My boyfriend says that he wants to come with so he can golf. It's been nonstop snowing here. He can fly for free because I listed him on my plan. I'm worried because he said there's a strip club in Dallas that was his absolute favorite.
Jaguars.
If I bring him, should I be concerned that he's just going to be in a strip club for 2 days? I've actually been there too.
They have the best breakfast buffet in the world. When people say, like, I go to a strip club for a breakfast buffet, like, I've been to Jaguars 4 or 5 times strictly because their waffles and eggs are that good.
All right, this is the line I didn't say. I'm worried because he said there's a strip club in Dallas that it was his absolute favorite. He loves strip clubs because of the buffets that are such a deal.
Yep.
I actually was at... Oh, no, never mind. Just kidding.
What were you going to say?
You were going to get yourself in trouble.
This was one in Jacksonville. Well, I'm addicted to it. There's a lot. We were in a lot of places and went to a lot of strip clubs.
We've been to strip clubs in Dallas.
And, yeah, but this kid that we were with was like trying to film him. The stripper took his phone, threw it across the room. It was a funny scene. But that was in Jacksonville, not Dallas.
Mm-hmm. And I still laugh. Just to clarify, Hank, it didn't mean anything.
Well, I was trying to remember where it was. It was in Dallas. It's super relatable.
To clarify, that wasn't like 2 years ago when we went to Jacksonville, right?
No, this was 2016.
Yeah,
I think way back. Every guy should get one.
Actually, 2015.
I think every guy should get one favorite strip club in the country. Just be like, this is my number one. If I ever find myself here, I gotta go.
Mm-hmm.
Mine's in West Virginia, the place we went after I won my fight.
Southern Charm.
Yeah. Southern X.
Mine's probably Cruise and Chubby's.
Okay.
In Wisconsin Dells.
I'm gonna go with Two Minis in Waco, Texas. Yeah.
In Gary,
Indiana. No, Landy. Oh, I thought you were talking about the Austin one from Varsity Blues.
Is it a franchise?
It's the actual one in Varsity Blues that they land next to.
Only noobs would say Spearmint Rhino.
Mm-hmm.
Why doesn't water go up my vajayjay when I take a bath?
I don't know. It should.
Buoyancy.
Suction.
Because then you wouldn't float.
Your pussy lips are too small.
Your pussy's a vacuum.
Too tight. Yeah.
I actually don't know, like, how you... If I would assume a woman would just drink all the bathwater with her pussy.
I think it's... Yeah. Like, it's a straw.
That's science, right? Like, if
osmosis.
If you just took in, like, a deep breath with your pussy lips, it should suck up some water, right?
Right, if you're reverse queefing. I think if you queef...
What do you mean? Yeah, it's a queef.
If you queef...
Queef is a burp.
That's a fart.
No, well, it's a burp.
Big Cat,
that's a vagina fart.
It's
a vagina burp.
What if you go in the water? What if you're in a bathtub and you fart? How come water doesn't go up your butthole?
I think it does.
Does it?
Yeah. I think water goes in your pee hole. Just not a lot, because it's a pee hole.
Yeah, it's like a
and
straw.
And you never know because you pee it out eventually.
Right, exactly. You just, reverse it.
Mm-hmm.
What's
like
up?
Playing Uno with bathwater.
Every time a chick goes in the water, they fuck.
Yes.
You're fucking Poseidon.
Uh-huh.
That's why you can't get pregnant in a hot tub.
True, yeah. True.
What's up, pussies? My boyfriend got me a car for Valentine's Day. I got him nothing.
Aggressive.
What should I get him as a great late gift?
Wait, a car or card?
A car.
Okay, this is an all-time makeup scenario that you're in right now. Like,
and also,
I thought we weren't getting each other anything big.
Yeah. Also, like, now, if this is true, which I don't think it is true, but if it is true, she is allowed to call us pussies because she's alpha. A car?
She got a truck for Valentine's Day from her, not even from her husband, from her boyfriend.
She's like Roadhead.
Yeah. Honestly, like that, you can get a girl anything for any occasion whatsoever, and she's like, I got you a blowjob. And the guy's going to be like, sweet.
Free back scratch.
That's exactly what like my best case scenario was.
Hey, hello, Big Cat / Short King. Hope all is well. I'm in a long-distance relationship in college and would like to play a prank on my boyf. I could think of no two better individuals to hear ideas for this from. Looking forward to hearing what you guys think. Smiley face. This is definitely a girl because she said boyf and used a little smiley face.
With a Y?
B-O-Y-F.
Yeah.
She wants to know how to prank her long-distance boyfriend.
Boyf,
sorry. I mean, a great prank is always if you have an identical twin, have that person cheat on the guy. And let him see, and then be like, psych, that's my twin.
Mm-hmm. Tell your boyfriend that you're pregnant.
That's a good prank, too.
But wait for 9 months since you've seen him.
Uh-huh.
So that's
tell
really
him you're pregnant,
thing.
Have him fly to you.
Yeah.
And then be like, have the sign at the airport, be like, just kidding.
I just missed you so much. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Propose to him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, just kidding, I'm not pregnant, but will you marry me?
Mm-hmm.
And then that's a prank, too. Yeah. And then give him a blowjob.
Mm-hmm.
And he'll be like, okay, that was a good prank.
Yeah, then he'll probably get you a car.
He'd actually be like, yeah, that's the best prank that yeah. anyone's ever gotten me with ever.
Mm-hmm.
All right, last one. I've been dating my boyfriend for about a year now, and I've been starting to notice something strange. Every time we have sex and he's about to come, his voice gets super high-pitched, and he starts talking super fast. The best thing I can compare it to is Jar Jar Binks.
Oh.
Do I say something or just let it go?
Billy, give us a reenactment so we can get in the mindset here.
Dude.
Come on. Give us a reenactment. High voice, really fast, Jar Jar Binks.
I've never saw
him. Oh, I'm about to come.
Oh, Misa about to ejaculate.
Oh, baby, I'm about to come.
Misa's so horny.
I'm honestly, I don't even know, I don't care about this question. I'm just still thinking about the pussy drinking bathwater.
It's international waters. Whatever happens on either side, 5 seconds either way of an orgasm does not count towards a permanent record.
You should just know, but honestly, just accidentally... do a voice record on your phone and then play it back, and he'll be like, wait, that's what I said. Because everyone hates the sound of their own voice, period.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone really hates the sound of their cum voice. So get him that way.
What if you just played the copycat game in bed? So you just repeated back to him everything that he
uh-huh,
said.
Uh-huh.
That would probably annoy him enough where he wouldn't do that anymore.
Billy, do you have a... I'm going to Google it.
He may be a candidate for an exorcism. Could
can
be that.
A vagina mm-hmm. drink bathwater? Vagina drink bathwater. Here we go, boys. Oh, I don't want this.
No.
13 daily ways you're damaging your vagina.
Yeah.
Cake
are
farts?
Yeast infections contagious? What happens if you suck in water through your vagina? Okay, this one I'm going to ask. I'm going to hit this one.
This sounds like a Gwyneth Paltrow website.
That is not really feasibly anatomically. What? This guy. No.
So it's not really a hole.
Yeah, what the hell?
If it was a hole, then water would be able to fill it.
Yeah, what? This is... It will probably just leak out like period blood. I'm on Ask Jeeves.
That was written by a dude.
Although I can't imagine doing it regularly is healthy, and I have no idea how you would do that. Okay.
Like, what if you water pie yourself?
Yeah. Yeah, okay. All right, what are the numbers?
8.
15.
99.
83. Zebras run towards grass fires because they can't 68. Outrun them.
68!
Oh.
Bring back 69, you fucking asshole, Billy.
No.
Wait, Billy, did you say that zebras run towards the sound of emergency?
No, zebras run towards grass fires because they know they can run through them and get to the other side that's burnt out because they can't outrun the fire.
Oh,
very smart. Why wouldn't
cool.
they be able
to... The fire's coming.
Why wouldn't they be able to outrun the fire?
Because it's fast.
Fire's faster than a horse?
Dude.
What?
Look it up. There's actually...
No chance.
I was watching...
It's faster. Man versus beast. Let's see.
A fire's faster than a horse?
Grass fire.
Zebra horse?
Let's see. Is
zebra's more
fire
of a donkey.
Faster...
A zebra's a horse?
...than a horse?
Isn't there like a Disney
no,
movie about
donkey,
it?
Donkey, zebra.
Winning like the...
dude, there's videos of zebras running, jumping into the fire and over the
so
other
you
side.
Saw it once doesn't mean they all do it. And maybe
dude,
they were just pyros.
Is this like the Marines commercial?
Maybe they just fucking, they love fire.
When other animals run away from
whoa,
the fire.
Yeah, was that the, what are you Googling over there?
It is pretty badass.
Nothing. I'm
have
not
headphones
Googling anything.
On
I
not
dispute your fact, and you don't have anything to back it up.
It's
besides, you saw a video. He's not talking in the mic, and Hank's going to kill
him. A zebra can run as fast as 40 miles per hour.
And how fast can fire, burn?
You
fire
can't,
because
it burns the whole
that.
Savannah, so they're like, oh, jump to the burnt side that isn't on fire, so we don't have to just run away from this fire the whole time.
Isn't it still hot where the fire just burned, though?
Yeah,
but if you jump through, it's like putting your hand through a
but on the other
candle.
Side, where you land,
it's a training exercise.
Is probably still
but the
hot.
Savannah's pretty big.
In order
like,
to become a fully grown...
Anywhere, in any direction except
any direction.
The fire. So zebras are stupid.
Zebras are morons. / pyros.
Love you guys.
It's Pardon My Take, presented by Barstool Sports.